I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up in our international briefing, Mexico's narco war escalates. We'll tell you more about that in just a few minutes. But first, today is the day recognized as the 100th anniversary of the founding of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. It is the oldest, largest, and probably best known of the nation's civil rights organizations. Founded a century ago by a multiracial group of white and black activists, the group was formed in response to a wave of lynchings and other violent attacks on blacks. But the group has evolved to engage on all fronts to establish equal rights and full citizenship for African Americans. To mark this anniversary, it seemed fitting to invite a new generation of civil rights activists to talk about what civil rights means now and what role the NAACP can play. We're joined by Stephanie Brown. She's National Field Director of the NAACP's Youth and College Division. And two guests from outside the organization. Jasmine Kanick is a writer who has worked extensively in both politics and grassroots organizing. And James Rucker is the co-founder and executive director of colorofchange.org. It's an online civil rights group. I welcome all of you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Stephanie, I want to start with you. What was your motivation for getting involved in the NAACP?
I started in the association when I was 14 years old, and simply because a woman in my church gave me a flyer for the youth council meeting, and they had pizza advertised and really a good time to intermingle with other young folks. And so for me at 14, that's pretty much all I needed was food and to interact with boys. and so I went to my first youth council meeting and, you know, got a chance to express how I felt about different issues going on in Cleveland at the time. And just from that initial meeting, I was hooked and I've been involved ever since.
Do you remember what those issues were?
I do. At the time, there was a case of a few high schools in Cleveland that were closing, of course, in majority black areas of the city. And so there was much concern between that and also youth employment. Those were pretty much the two biggest issues that we focused on when I was 14.
Okay. James, what about you? Why did you start Color of Change? What got you involved in this particular kind of activism?
Yeah, absolutely. I had actually been a director at MoveOn.org, which also does online activism. And really, it was in the wake of Katrina, basically the failed government response, and the realization that black folks and others who care about the issues that affect our communities simply had basically no political power. It wasn't as if the Bush administration or members of Congress were thinking, oh my goodness, you know, the organized black folks who help fund our campaigns or lean on us, we're going to catch hell from them. We were basically non-existent as a political force, which made me want to give a shot at taking what we had done at Move On and create something similar for the African-American community.
And for those who don't know what Move On is?
Move On essentially uses the internet to keep people informed about what's happening politically and then give people a chance or a way to aggregate their political power, whether it's petition signatures online, contributions that go to fund political ads, and various ways of lobbying Congress and others to do the right thing.
And Jasmine, one of the reasons we called you is that you kind of bridge the old school and new school model. You've worked both in the system and out of the system. You've worked for a state lawmaker. You've worked for members of Congress inside the traditional political way, but you also blog. You've worked outside. You sort of take on issues as you see fit using the internet, using the blogging model. Do you see yourself as a civil rights activist?
I'm just an activist, more or less like human rights, which underneath that comes civil rights. But I think my focus is more on human rights these days, just basic human rights that we still need to focus on in this country.
I'm interested to hear you say that because that is something that the new president of the NAACP also talked about. Ben Jealous is the latest president. He's also the youngest in the organization's history. Jasmine, I'll start with you and then I want to go to Stephanie. When you say human rights, what does that mean and how is that different from civil rights?
For me, human rights basically are just the right to exist comfortably, the right to have a meal, a roof over my head, the right to be able to go out and find work, the right to live my life the way I see fit. Those are human rights and education, making sure that our children have access to the same education as children on the West Side. Or you understand what I'm saying?
You're in Los Angeles.
Right, exactly. We still need to make sure that those basic needs are met. You know, here in Los Angeles, you take a walk on Skid Row, 80% of the people you see are African American. We have a lot of work we need to do.
And just to sort of put a fine point on it, you are an African American woman. You are an out lesbian, and part of your message, as I understand it, is that those are identities, but those aren't the only aspects of activism that interest you. Do I have that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm Black, I'm a female, and I'm a lesbian. And a lot of times I put it in that exact order because at the end of the day, I'm not a gay activist. You know, if anything, I'm an activist on African-American Black issues. And under those issues come LGBT issues, which, again, you know, speaking of the NAACP, issues that we need to address within that organization as well.
And Stephanie, to this point, Ben Jellison, talking about the anniversary of the NAACP and his mission, one of the things he said is, and I'm quoting here, "Our agenda as we head into our second century as a civil rights organization is also to revive our legacy as a human rights organization." What did he mean by that? What do you think that means?
Yeah, and I'm so happy that our president and CEO has really verbalized really what the association has been was founded on and what we've been aiming to practice, which is to ensure that people have their human rights met. You know, we know that the civil rights struggle is very important in what we've been involved in since our inception in 1909. But that really goes to talk about, you know, what your government tells you that you can and cannot have or what's in the Constitution. You know, your human rights are the basic needs that need to be met. Do you have food? Do you have shelter? Do you have, you know, a roof over your head? So while we're fighting for the civil rights of individuals to be able to have the right to vote, to be able to, you know, not be unreasonably searched, you know, while we are fighting for those rights, we also have to fight for, you know, to make sure that our children are not living in poverty in this country. And so while you can look at, you know, human rights for most people has not been at the forefront of the civil rights movement, it really is the umbrella under which the civil rights movement really comes from.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Stephanie Brown, Jasmine Kanick, and James Rucker about the 100th anniversary of the founding of the NAACP. And also, what's the next wave of civil rights activism? Is it human rights? James Rucker, I wanted to ask you, now, you clearly felt that there was a need for a group with some kind of ethnic identity. Why is that? Is it to focus on particular issues of concern to Blacks and other people of color, or is it to galvanize their interests around sort of affinity? Like, do you see what I'm saying? What's the difference? Mm-hmm. Is it between folks as activists or as objects? Why do you need a color of change?
I think you hit it on the head, actually, on both points. I mean, on the one hand, Move On, like Color of Change and organizations like ours, are largely empowerment tools for everyday people that come to the table. And people, in reality, right, in society, we are segregated to some degree. And what you'd see at Move On is the issues, the number one, two, three, four issues that would come to the fore would be issues that are definitely of concern to progressives in general, white progressives in particular. Things like, say, you know, voting rights or inequities in the criminal justice system or inequities in education. These are progressive issues, but they're not the top burner issues for your, you know, kind of average white progressive. But they are big issues, very big issues for African Americans and other folks. So in terms of being effective as a channel for advocacy, there was a lack in terms of different communities that were being served. At the same time, what we're looking to do is get people off the fence or off the couch and engage in activism. The idea is to make it very easy for them to jump in. What we face is we try to reach people where they are, but when it comes to mobilizing and speaking to people, you know, it's a little tricky.
I wanted to run this past you. During the Republican National Convention, former presidential candidate John McCain made this statement about education in America.
Education is the civil rights issue of this century. Equal access to public education has been gained, but what is the value of access to a failing school? We need to shake up failed school bureaucracies with competition, empower parents with choice.
Now, obviously, John McCain is focused on a particular policy preference that he has. But Stephanie, what about that? Do you agree with John McCain, for example, and Arne Duncan, for example, who's also President Obama's education secretary, that education is really the civil rights issue of our time?
To say, is it the civil rights issue of our generation? I think it's up to debate. It's definitely at the forefront because, you know, we have eliminated segregated schools per se. However, we do know that we have still inadequate education facilities and opportunities for children depending upon either their racial background and more so their socioeconomic standing. And so definitely education is a key issue, but there's so many more, such as the criminal justice system. To say that is that that the only one, I think is really up to debate.
One of the reasons it's an interesting and important question is that the NAACP is in part identified with the whole question of equal access to quality schools. Mm-hmm. Of course, the Brown v. Board of Ed decision, but some would argue, look, if the focus is on everything, the focus is really on nothing. You can't really make progress unless you focus your attention on a few key issues.
Yeah. And so that's why, you know, for us, we have developed an agenda of, you know, what is going into a century of being established as an organization. What are our agenda items for the upcoming year?
But Stephanie, I'm sorry, forgive me for interrupting mm-hmm. you. But if you were to ask most of your peers what mm-hmm. the NAACP stands for, do you mm-hmm. think they'd know?
I think that there would be some skewed responses. I think most folks would say, I don't know what in the world you guys do.
Is that okay with you?
I understand it. I understand it because we do not do a great job of saying what we have done and what we're working on. I can say that PR and communications is not our strong suit. Neither is technology, which is something that our president and CEO is very big on. And once people learn what's happening on a local, state, or national level within NAACP, a lot of folks are interested in and want to get involved.
Jasmine, I think you might have some thoughts about this, too.
My concern goes to both some of the things that Stephanie said as well as James, and just in terms of, okay, are we excluding the least among us, right? So how are we reaching out to folks on the projects? Because the same folks we're talking about in terms of the education being an issue, well, you know what? You're talking about my parents' generation. I'm 31 years old. Now, my parents' generation was hit very hard with crack. So remember, we have a whole generation of Black people my age who were raised by their grandparents because their parents sort of fell off the map. Mm-hmm. And from there on, we sort of disintegrated, you know, in terms of the Black family structure. That is an issue we need to be focusing on. We need to be focusing on how do we reach the least among us and how do we bring them into the fold and empower them as well. And it's not always going to be online because everyone doesn't have access.
We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about the past and future of the nation's oldest civil rights organization and what does civil rights, human rights mean now. This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. Please stay with us. Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, violence escalates in Mexico as the drug war continues. We'll talk more about that in just a few minutes. But first, we're going to continue our conversation keyed to the 100th anniversary of the founding of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the oldest, largest, and probably best known of the nation's civil rights organizations. We're talking to a next generation, a younger generation of civil rights activists to talk about what the NAACP stands for now, or should stand for now. I'm joined by Stephanie Brown, National Field Director of the NAACP's Youth and College Division. Other guests are Jasmine Canick, a writer, blogger, and activist, and James Rucker, founder and executive director of colorofchange.org. It's an online civil rights group. Right at the end of the last segment, Jasmine mentioned the importance of reaching those who are the least among us, those without computers and internet access. James, how do you respond to that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think the point that Jasmine just made, I think, is a critical point in terms of who is brought in and who's empowered when. In terms of our outreach and who we attract, absolutely, you'd be surprised. Again, when we look at Katrina, you had Kanye West, right, who obviously is making a good living, feeling pretty much disempowered and politically impotent. As a people, from the least among us to those who are doing the best, we don't have a lot of political power, and there are people who would stand back, watch the news, get upset, but not have a pathway that they believed would lead to some kind of change, and that's part of what we try to do is provide that. But there's a very, you know, and we also do things offline, but in truth, those folks who are suffering the most in terms of the issues that we're talking about are, I think, the hardest in a lot of ways to bring into the fold, and I think it's critical work. And part of what we do, quite frankly, you're right, we're reaching people who may not be online, but they may be one hop away from someone online. You know, often people will talk about new versus old, you know, online versus off. We really need a bunch of folks, a bunch of organizations playing different roles because the landscape is so large.
The number of people who died in Hurricane Katrina, almost equally divided between blacks and whites. Okay? Almost to a person. Mm-hmm. Now, it's also it's true that the rebuilding of communities has been very different. Areas that were affluent, areas that predominantly black, there's a very different pace of rebuilding depending on what part of the city or the area you're from. But in terms of who died, almost equally divided between blacks and whites, which is something that many people seem to have forgotten. This leads to the question is, the kinds of issues that all of you have identified as being particularly important today, does there need to be a black-focused organization to do those things? Or should the NAACP in some ways return to its roots as a multiracial organization? Stephanie, do you want to start?
While the majority of our membership is African-American, of African descent, we have remained a multiracial organization. I mean, you can go across the country and see where we have people of various ethnic backgrounds who are leading our different chapters. And so, you know, I would definitely say that for us, if you talk about the 20 cities where people of color are most populated, black people are, we are in those chapters. But we're also across the country in areas where you don't even have a majority black population. And we have a very strong active presence there. And so we've seen, especially over the last few years, that there is a need to have a coalition of people of different backgrounds, of different economic standings to work together to address these issues. Because as we see, the time for coalition building, and I would agree that the landscape is so large that there needs to be many organizations of different types working together in order for us to really accomplish what we're setting out to do.
Jasmine, what do you think about that? And it's also, I can't believe we've escaped without pointing out that there is an African-American president. I can't believe we haven't mentioned that to this point, because there are those who would argue that all these groups have a different challenge or focus or context now. So, Jasmine, what do you say about that?
You know, I guess I'm trying to be too cynical. My father says I'm very cynical. I just think that we need to focus on black people, and we need to learn how to work together, and we need to come together as a community with all of our different organizations to the betterment of our people, all of our people. I need personally for organizations like the NAACP, SCLC, Urban League, I need to see more people involved in those organizations under the age of 50. I also need those organizations to understand that I don't only want to be communicated with when you're asking me for money. I need those organizations to also take up the issues that divide our community. So whether that be gay marriage or whether that be the woman's right to choose, I need these organizations to stop dancing around these issues, allowing them to separate our community when it's election time, and let's just address these issues head on. I think if we can do all of those things, figure out how to come together, address these issues, and also remember that, you know, we need to reach out to people who are under the age of 50, under the age of 40, and figure out how to take up issues that are relevant to 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds, because that's another issue. How do you bring people, how do you engage people in your organization? You take up those issues that may be relevant to them. So whether it's the issue of gay marriage or misogyny in hip-hop, which, you know, are issues for black people, well, we need to be talking about that. But more importantly, we need to be talking to each other. And if all of our organizations could figure out a way, you know, to get over themselves and work together cohesively for the betterment of African people, then maybe we can move forward as a country. Because, you know what, just having President Barack Obama in the White House does not mean all is good with black people. And all I have to do is look out my front window to see that black man sleeping outside in front of a church to know that that's true.
But why does it have to be, and I do want to hear from the other folks on this, why does it have to be just black people?
Because that's who I'm concerned about. And I think when you know, me personally, I am concerned about black people. We have a lot of problems. We've made a lot of progress thanks to the NAACP and other organizations, but we still have a long ways to go. And I'm sorry, but I have to bring up this issue since it also hasn't been mentioned. There are a lot of us who still want to see reparations take place. You know, we still have a lot of issues as black people, and we need to work with ourselves, I personally believe, before we go out there trying to help everybody else.
Okay, well, you've given us a lot to work with, Jasmine. So let's get Stephanie get her oar in the water, and I also want to hear from James.
Yeah, I would just say that in 1909, the call that was issued by William English Walling's, one of our founders was, what large and powerful body of citizens will come to the aid of Black people in this country? That is the call that we were founded on. And so while today we are focused on and have always been focused on having a multiracial group of people to advance African Americans in this country, that is our focus. Our focus target constituency is Black people in this country. That is who we are working to advance, because we know that when the agenda and the problems of Black people in this country are solved, when they're pushed ahead, when they're advanced, the rest of the country follows. You know, we've been proud to be somewhat the conscience of America, to say that for the least of these, we need to do the most. And so for us, I mean, I definitely agree.
Forgive me, Stephanie, some would argue that Black folks are no longer the least of these. How could that be?
Let me tell you, you can definitely go to communities around the country. I mean, you know, fortunately, I've been able to go from Palo Alto to Clarksdale, Mississippi. And a lot of these communities, the least of these are African Americans. If you look at the unemployment rates, if you look at the homicide cases that are not solved in our Black communities, when you look at the poor education facilities that our children have to go to, we know that in a lot of ways, African Americans are the least of these in this country.
Okay.
However, so if we can raise the bar and advance Black people in this country, bring everybody else along with us, you know, that's the agenda that we're trying to push forward, and just really sticking true to the mission of the association.
James Rucker, final thought from you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's easy, or we often get asked to kind of find out who's doing the worst. The reality is that Black folks as a community, we have a lot of work still to do. And you have other communities that have a lot of work to do. And I think for groups like Color of Change or the NAACP, what we're doing is we're focusing on communities where we have some access, we have language, we have a way to channel energy. And of course, as the young sister just explained, right, there's a way in which we bring up other people. And I think when we look, the reason why I was at MoveOn.org was because we had a mission to further a progressive agenda that benefited a lot of people. I think it's important to note that, you know, of our members, over 500,000 members, a lot of those folks aren't Black, but they recognize the value of achieving gains on some of these very difficult issues. And with President Obama in office, certainly, I mean, it's an amazing, I think for the most important aspect of Obama as president, as far as our community, is you have young little boys, little girls growing up who will have a very different view of what's possible. At the same time, we've got inequities in education. We've got a very different experience of African-Americans and others in the criminal justice system. And there is definitely a danger of all of that being overlooked, because we've got some, and again, no disrespect to President Obama at all, but we've got a certain kind of window dressing. We've got a new story that's symbolic and important, but it doesn't in itself solve the problems that hopefully the NAACP, Color of Change, and others will be working on and solving.
Well, I something tells me this isn't the last conversation we're going to have about these issues. So we'll call this maybe the first conversation of the next 100 years. How about that?
Sounds good.
Sounds great.
James Rucker is the co-founder and executive director of colorofchange.org. It's an online civil rights group. He joined us from San Francisco. We were also joined by Stephanie Brown, national field director of the NAACP's Youth and College Division. She joined us from our studios at NPR West, along with Jasmine Kanick. She's a journalist and civil rights activist. She was also at NPR West. I thank you all so much for speaking with us.
Thank you,
Michelle.
Thank you.
And we hope you know that with Tell Me More, the conversation never ends. You just heard from these three young activists about how they see the future of the civil rights movement. Now we'd like to hear from you. Do you think there's still a need for organizations like the NAACP or the NAACP itself? What do you think the NAACP's priorities should be? To tell us more about what you think, you can call our comment line at 202-842-3522. That's 202-842-3522. Please remember to tell us your name, or you can always go to our website at npr.org and blog it out.